This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio Sinoland, Seek Truth from Facts Foundation, the China Writers Group, and the Bioweapon Truth Commission. I have covered in spades the Anglo-Saxon Allied invasion of France on June 6, 1944, popularly known as D-Day. I will leave the links. The article is in English, French, and Chinese. I consider it that important that I had it translated into the other languages. And it was definitely genocide. I will get into this in just a few minutes. I had heard about AMGOT, A-M-G-O-T, American Military Government in overseas territories, and I knew that the United States established an American military government in Japan, the Philippines, and I knew that they were planning it in France, and I thought that that was something that was done after the invasion, after the arrival of the American troops. However, I just ran across this article here. I ran out of white paper, so I found some stationery paper to print it out. From Le Monde Diplomatique. And Le Monde, of course, is the leading, you know, leftist newspaper in France, and one of the and Le Figaro, of course, is on the right. And it's by Annie Lacroix-Rie, and she actually wrote a book about the relations between the United States and the and France from 1944 to 1948. And she's a professor of contemporary history at Paris, so she obviously knows her stuff. She's been studying the French-American relations during the war period extensively. And she wrote an article that is entitled When the U.S. Wanted to Take Over France. Now let's flash back to before D-Day, of course. The Germans annexed part of France in 1940, and then they invaded France and got, and I think it was 1940, right after that, in fact, and they got the northern part and the western part of France, including, of course, Paris. And the part that they did not get was called Free France, and that was essentially the south central part of France. And then even Mussolini got the southeastern part of France occupied, and a government was established in Vichy. V-I-C-H-Y, that was the fascist government that worked with the Nazis in Germany for the occupied territories. The Free France was, of course, represented by General Charles de Gaulle, who was a nationalist and a patriot and was against the Vichy government. So I'm just going to read a few passages from this article, and then I'll just tell you what's going on. Ms. Lacroix-Rie wrote, in 1941 and 42, the United States intended that France, together with soon-to-be-defeated Italy, Germany, and Japan, was to be part of a protectorate, in other words, a colony, run by the Allied Military Government of the Occupied Territories, also abbreviated AMGOT. According to the agreement of November 1942, now remember, this is a year and a half before the invasion, a year and a half before they were planning this, between Admiral Jean-François Darlan on the French side and U.S. General Mark Clark, on the Allied side, which secured France's commitment to the Allied cause, AMGOT would have abolished its national sovereignty, including its right to issue currency. Some historians believe this plan stemmed from President Franklin D. Roosevelt's antipathy towards Charles de Gaulle. Roosevelt saw him as a dictator in training and sought to prevent him from ruling post-Pétain. Marshal Henri-Philippe Pétain led the pro-Nazi government of unoccupied France at Vichy, 1940 to 1944. The argument that Roosevelt intended to establish universal democracy is compelling but wrong. So she's suggesting that the high ideals of Roosevelt were not 100% clean as far as spreading universal democracy around the world. The United States wanted to colonize France. I continue. The U.S. was concerned that France, although weakened by its 1940 defeat, might reject the plan to be colonized by the United States, especially if its presidency went to de Gaulle, who had vowed to restore French sovereignty. It feared France might use its nuisance capacity, in other words, standing up for your country and your people and your nation, to be independent and free of Anglo-Saxon tyranny, as it had when it opposed pro-German U.S. policies after the First World War. Of course, if you don't know, of course, World War I was completely mapped out by Britain, and they enlisted France and Russia up until the Russian Revolution in 1917 to destroy Germany, and they did. But then after that, they still wanted Russia. They never got Russia. They didn't get Russia's resources because of the Russian Revolution. And so then they planned out World War II by plucking Hitler out of obscurity, just like Obama and Macron, out of obscurity and sculpting a Pygmalion leader to do the dirty deeds of the deep state, the city of London, Wall Street. So obviously the United States and England were very pro Hitler, since they created him and cultivated him, and because they wanted him to take over Russia and get all those resources that they wanted before World War I. Here we go. It feared France might use its nuisance capacity, as it had when it opposed pro-German U.S. policies after the First World War. France would not have wanted to relinquish its empire, of course, Africa mainly, but also Southeast Asia, rich in raw materials and strategic bases. The U.S. had long called for an open-door policy for goods and investments in all colonial empires. Obviously, America only had the Philippines, Cuba, Guam, Puerto Rico, and it was obviously, you know, France and England that had the vast global empires that the U.S. wanted to also profit from. The U.S. relied on twin strategies, ignoring de Gaulle and dealing with Pétain, the fascist leader for Hitler, with Pétain's regime, with a combination of accommodation and toughness. It realized that Vichy, like the Latin American regimes, in other words, all the fascist dictatorships in Latin America that the United States controlled, like the Latin American regimes dear to its heart, was more malleable than a government with broad popular support. In other words, the United States did not want a democratic France that would be against America colonizing France. They wanted a fascist government in France, along with Spain and Portugal, right next door, that were already fascist, and so that they could control France and get its hands on France's incredible natural and human resources and its colonial empire around the world. The U.S. plan for a Vichy sans Vichy, in other words, fascist without the Vichy government, took shape. French elites supported the idea. They clung to the Vichy regime, which had restored privileges taken away by the pre-war Republican government, and were eager to make a painless transition from German rule to the Pax Americana. In other words, the rich and the elites, the bourgeois in France, were happy to live under a fascist regime controlled by the United States so that they would have all of their perks and privileges of aristocracy and wealth. General Clark had Darlan sign an agreement on 22 November 1942, placing North Africa at the disposal of the United States and making France a, quote, vassal, end of quote, state, subject to, quote, capitulations, end of quote. In other words, capitulations means is you pull your pants down and get it in the backside by Uncle Slaughter, and you become a puppet for Washington. The U.S. assumed unprecedented rights over French territorial extensions in Africa, including overseeing troop movements, ports, airfields, military defenses and munitions, communications, networks, and the merchant navy. Not much left. The agreement also provided for U.S. requisition of goods and services, tax exemptions, extraterritorial rights, which means, of course, the Americans in colonized France could rape a French girl and nothing, or you could murder a French guy and you would not be tried in court, just like in Hong Kong and all the other colonies around the world. And U.S. determined military zones, so the United States would determine the military zones and occupy and colonize France. Joint commissions would be responsible for law and order, current administration, censorship, and economic policy. This is actually very similar to the agreements that were forced. It's what the Chinese called unequal treaties or unfair treaties that the Japanese forced the Chinese to sign after 1937, when they moved down into the rest of China, and even before, when they occupied the northeast in Manchuria, and turned the Chinese were there in an administrative capacity, but the Japanese were making all the decisions. Laval had sealed his fate by hoping for a, quote, a German victory, assisted by his son-in-law, etc. Darlan, right after, was 1 month later, was assassinated by an anti-Vichyite with Gaullist connections. In other words, Charles de Gaulle's freedom fighters killed Darlan on 24 December 1942, just 22 days after he signed away his nation, he signed away his sovereignty, he signed away the freedom of the French people. Continuing on, I'm skipping through, of course. I'm just doing some highlights. The U.S. depicted de Gaulle as a right-wing dictator and a puppet of French communists in the USSR. This is hysterical because De Gaulle was actually very anti-communist. So, but this is, they paint, anything to tar, your enemy. I mean, he was a very conservative. He was a very conservative Catholic, was definitely not pro-communist. In fact, he very deftly neutered the Communist Party after the war. The U.S. depicted de Gaulle as a right-wing dictator and a puppet of French communists in the USSR. How can you be a right-wing dictator and a communist pawn? You tell me that. But it had to abandon plans to impose the dollar in liberated territories. On 23 October 1944, that would have been June, July, August, September, October, about 4.5 months after the invasion. Now, the Allies officially recognized de Gaulle as head of the French government. The USSR had recognized France's true government, in other words, de Gaulle's government, 2.5 years before. So the Soviets were way ahead of the rest of the world in recognizing de Gaulle as the legitimate leader of the French people. On December 1944, France signed a treaty of alliance and mutual security with Moscow to offset U.S. power. De Gaulle described it in glowing terms. Excluded from Yalta, of course, the French, just like the Chinese, were completely excluded from Yalta. The Yalta Conference in 1945, in other words, when Stalin and Roosevelt and Churchill, carved up the post-war world, and dependent on the U.S. So France was excluded from the Yalta Conference in 1945, as was China, and dependent on the U.S., France became a key part of the U.S. sphere of influence, but only vigorous resistance, internal and external, had saved it from becoming a U.S. protectorate. And who else, and who was that? That was Charles de Gaulle. Without Charles de Gaulle, France today would be like a big Greece or a big Portugal, completely subjugated by the city of London and Wall Street. In fact, in 1964, when de Gaulle was president, he recognized China, the People's Republic of China. He was the first, France was the first major power after the war to recognize China and be recognized back. So that they had mutual diplomatic recognition long before Nixon did in 1972. And then in 1966, de Gaulle kicked NATO out of France. I mean, he literally gave them 1 week to get out of France. And so they scuttlebutted to Brussels, and that's why NATO is in Brussels today. And that was that kept France out of the NATO sphere of influence until CIA Nicolas Sarkozy, the president from 2007 to 2012, let the CIA into their White House called the Élysée, and he put NATO back in control of the French military. And since then, since 2007, along with the Lisbon Treaty of 2009, which is a Anglo-Saxon City of London, Wall Street, Trojan horse for austerity and to privatize everything, France and Europe have been going to hell. It's really interesting. De Gaulle hated the Anglo-Saxons. He hated the English. He hated the Americans. He hated their leaders. And for very good reason, because they lied to him, they backstabbed him, they tried to kill him. De Gaulle had 22 assassination attempts on him, and many of those were perpetrated by the CIA and MI6 in Britain. And he knew who the enemy was. He knew that the Americans and the British were a bunch of lying, thieving, stealing, greedy, hegemonic bastards. And in fact, his staff would constantly remind him during the war that the enemy is Germany. The enemy is Germany, because he was so concerned about the United States and Britain trying to fuck over France and the French people, which they were. And he could see what others did not want to see. In this article, the fact that they were planning this 18 months, well, we can even go back to 2 years before the invasion, will tell you everything you need to know about America's intentions and how unnoble the invasion actually was. And this, of course, helps explain why they bombed France, Italy, and Germany into oblivion during the invasion, that's what I report on. And I'm going to have to up the number from 50,000 to 60,000 to 75,000, because I've done more research. I started looking into other articles when I read this, and in fact, the consensus is that the Americans and the British exterminated 60,000 to 75,000 French people right after, in the months right after June 6, 1944, bombing 1,500 cities, destroying hundreds of thousands of homes, and putting almost a million French out. It made them homeless. So it was obviously to soften up and destroy France to prepare it for America's occupation and colonization of France, and to get their hands on all of France's vast colonial countries in Africa and eventually Southeast Asia. Extremely fascinating, and I will post all of this just to let you know that, you know, sometimes what we see is not always what is the truth. And I knew the invasion was a complete and total plan to subjugate France and Italy and Germany, the heart of European industry and agriculture, but I didn't realize that it was to the point where they were going to actually, you know, colonize, and that they had planned it so far in advance that was obviously the main intention of the invasion, was not to liberate. It was not to take it to the Germans, because it was the Russians who were churning, who were grinding Nazis into dog food on the Eastern Front, and losing 25 to 35 million people doing it. And it was Mao Zedong and the Chinese people who also lost another 35 million in Asia, grinding the Japanese into dog food, and the fascist U.S. supported Chiang Kai-shek KMT. It's just history is written by the victors. And clearly the United States and England have written the history of what happened during the Allied invasion. But this article here puts in perspective what really happened. This is Jeff J. Brown signing out. Have a wonderful day.